Guess what, STS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of Chill Out Gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD, and when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic Gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time Gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there's pre-rolls, there's bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
As the search for Nancy Guthrie enters month two, that is hard to believe. Daughter Savannah and family returned to the house today. Up in the Tucson foothills, they stood in front of an ever-growing memorial. They left notes for their mom. They looked at the flowers, and for the first time in weeks, this case has really felt less like an investigation and more like a family's quiet heartbreak playing out in the public. And we've got a neighbor of Nancy Guthrie's here to help kind of fill in what the mood is like, has been like in Tucson, and also some law enforcement officers to get down to the bottom of what is happening.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon with more than 50 countries represented, bringing you the best guests in all of true crime. And it is day 30. We are entering into month two, into the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. And man, this has the entire world scratching its head, its collective head, going, what is happening here today? Savannah Guthrie, along with her sister and brother-in-law, Andy Guthrie, and her husband, visited Nancy's home and memorial outside the memorial. People have been leaving flowers. There was a woman singing there the other day. It was somber. It was emotional. And it underscores one thing for sure right now. The case is more than just an investigation. It is a family, albeit a very well-known member of this family, living life in limbo, and just, I don't know how else to say it, literally just being tortured in front of the world as this investigation appears to be creeping forward. Here to help us break it all down, a former lieutenant within Pima County. You've got an all local Tucson show tonight. We wanted to do that on purpose because these are the guys who know the area best. So Lieutenant Bob Krieger is back, a former SWAT commander, and made his way up the chain of command within the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Next up, Jeff Lemie. Here he is. He is a neighbor of Nancy Guthrie's. And Jeff, I'll have you break that down in just 1 second, exactly how close you are and all that good stuff. And last but certainly not least, Kurt Dabb. He is a retired Pima County homicide detective. There's something we're going to talk about later in the show, or not that much later in the show. And Kurt knows, has a connection to what we're going to talk about. So we're going to explore all of these things. Kurt also making it clear in the last show that this is not easy for him, having been a homicide detective. And now, you know, we're back to a very high profile crime in his home city. And so this is more than just a true crime story, but it affects people in very real ways. And speaking of that, Jeff, let's start with you. I mean, How close do you live to Nancy? I understand you're just 3 or 4 houses away. Did you know her? Just kind of set the stage for us.
Yeah, we're about, as you said, about 4 doors down, but the lots are fairly large, so it's around the corner. So it's maybe about a 2-minute walk. Candidly, we would see her when we were walking our dogs. We saw a bit less of her recently. She had a dog herself. Say hello in the morning, greet her. We did not know that her daughter is a major media figure. Candidly, there are some, we've lived here 6 years. We know folks in the community have lived here 20 years who didn't know. I think she was a very, just a part of the community, a neighbor you'd greet, say hello to. And there wasn't necessarily an awareness of her daughter or her connection.
Yeah, so obviously the story breaks on the evening of January 31st into the first, Jeff. And then, you know, the world media descends. I mean, how much time was there between the quote-unquote abduction, which we don't know if it really, in fact, is a quote-unquote, you know, intended abduction. But how long from that period of time till you obviously were inundated with the world media and realized what a big story this was?
Well, Sunday afternoon, we saw the Sheriff's Department helicopter in the neighborhood for a duration, and a large number, a huge response, and including later on a volunteer crew, this great people who do rescue of lost hikers, et cetera, who are scouring the neighborhood. So obviously there was an awareness that there was something happening on Sunday afternoon when this started to escalate. And then we learned the news, the sad news, that she was missing. Immediately everyone surrounding us looked in their backyards. You know, perhaps there was a thought that, you know, we initially thought maybe it was a silver alert or what have you. And, you know, as you know, we found nothing. Fairly soon thereafter, there was a response and outreach from law enforcement for access to Ring video, access to properties. Everybody, obviously, very forthcoming, deeply concerned about her and saddened.
Yeah. And Jeff, I don't want to pry about personal stuff and feel free to not answer, but do you have surveillance video? Do you have cameras? Is it stuff that you handed over personally to police?
Sure. In this day and age, I think everyone has a Ring system or some sort of simple safe or what have you. Mm-hmm. The challenge is, and once again, not law enforcement, not an expert in any way, shape or form, but the cameras were situated to view your home, to protect your home. And with the size of the lots, they didn't really capture much beyond that. And but everything was shared readily. And as we know, here we are, unfortunately, to my knowledge, and absolutely from our home and our neighbors' homes, my understanding that nothing was readily available that would be helpful.
Kurt, to you, there's a couple of comments. You see one of them here. You know, not knowing has got to be the hardest part. And then, yes, not knowing is torture. Kurt, I mean, speak to that aspect. Excuse me. Speak to that aspect of this. Just the fact that this investigation seems to be in limbo. Everything is in limbo, including the life of an 84-year-old woman who we don't know. And we're praying that she's with us. Most people don't think that she is. And I think that includes, you know, as much as Savannah Guthrie and family are praying for her to be alive, I think they've also, you know, realistically have also prepared themselves for the fact that that is not the case. But what about this notion that we just don't know right now, Kurt?
Yeah, no, it's horrible. Look, I have a mother, you know, she's 77 years old, just turned 77. She lives by herself, you know, in Southern Florida. I mean, we have family nearby, but, you know, she's living in a home, and it would break my heart, you know, not knowing that she's safe. I call her every night. I'm like, make sure your doors are locked. Make sure your windows are locked. Don't answer the door. Don't answer the phone. So, yeah, I can't even imagine. And just the fact that this whole ordeal, this entire case has been played out in the public. Like if it was you or I, or, you know, any of the gentlemen here, you know, with us today, or any of the people, you know, that are watching, if it was any of their families, it wouldn't have been played out in public like this. So, you know, that's one of the ulterior motives that, you know, I'm interested in, you know, trying to suss out and figure out why it was done this way. 'Cause that just adds, you know, to the family's stress. Untold. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And speaking of family, we got Penny lingering behind you. She's a fan favorite of STS Nation. That is Kurt's dog, part Malinois, which I love. Jeff, just back to you for a second before I get to Bob. Did you know Nancy's dog? I mean, Tucson is a huge dog friendly community. So did you know that? I didn't know that. I'm just hearing this now that her dog passed in December. Did you know that?
Yeah, we'd been informed. It's a little black terrier. We would see it sometimes, you know, in the past with her in her front yard. But we had learned that, as I mentioned, we'd seen a bit less of her lately. And we learned that her dog had passed away, but it was obviously something that was near and dear to her.
Yeah. I mean, dogs are about as close, you know, creatures that we get about as close to them, you know, as anyone or anything. But Bob, to you, motive is totally mystifying. I mean, I know you guys are the two law enforcement guys, you and Kurt, but let's you know, take a half step back here. You guys live in the community and you got to be wondering the same things as us, Bob, which is what is going on here? I mean, first, a dumb question for you. As a former SWAT commander, I know a little black terrier is not going to stop you. But if you're, you know, on some sort of botched robbery, if that's what maybe this was, and you're hearing a dog who sadly passed, but let's say she had the dog at the time and this dog was yapping, could that have changed the outcome, or is that a ridiculous notion?
No, I don't think it's a ridiculous notion at all. You know, when someone's doing something like this, the last thing they want is attention, especially in that moment. So having that little yappy dog like we all do, you know, or a big, strong, barky dog, whatever it might be, that's going to draw attention. That's going to get Jeff's attention a few houses down, especially at 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, why is this dog going off that we don't normally hear? So anything like that is an advantage. It's something to make the bad guy feel uncomfortable and hopefully more likely say, hey, I don't need this right now. Get in your car and drive away. Not a silly question at all. And it doesn't matter how big or how small it is. You know, even motion sensor lights and things like that, that's just unwanted attention that is going to cause more problems for the suspect.
Yeah. And Bob, I mean, to you on this, just as a public service announcement, because I've had this own conversation with my wife about our own home security, but at a bare minimum, because not everyone has money to just go out and spend on a home security system. But what do you, as a former SWAT commander in Tucson, bare minimum wise, recommend homeowners have around their home?
It's such a difficult question because it starts with what you feel comfortable with. Uh-huh. You know, people talk about guns and dogs and cameras and lights and all of that. It all are good in their own way. At a minimum, I would say a motion sensor light near, you know, especially if you have big properties like Jeff has, like I have, like Kurt has, we all live in very similar neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You know, motion sensor lights, some sort of camera. My camera system isn't on a subscription system, but I have a home DVR. So there's ways around all of those things. If you want to start delving down other roads, people always talk about, I need a gun. You need a gun for home protection if you're comfortable with that gun. And if you're going to go with a gun, you don't need to get anything fancy. You get a shotgun. You know, I'm not going to be a proponent for firearms or anything like that, but you asked the question.
Yeah.
And if you want to protect yourself and your family and you feel the need to get a gun, if you're skilled with handguns, great. Most people aren't. Most cops don't shoot well with handguns. It's really hard to miss with buckshot. It really is. So, you know, that's the spectrum. And it starts with what you feel comfortable with. But at a minimum today, with the cost of cameras so cheap and you've got 1080p at a minimum for $50, you can put an old cell phone up at your front door and get good cameras these days. So, you know, it might not stop someone in the moment, but it also is going to provide law enforcement what they need to follow up on. And that's what they are following up on now. All of those things that, you know, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks and why there's such a demand for all these video clips that gives the detectives and the investigators something to follow up on.
Now, you know that I like to stir the S sometimes. Kurt Dabb, would you ever challenge Bob Krieger at a firing range?
No,
not a good idea.
No, negative. The SWAT guys get all the bullets, man, and they hit the shoot. And that's what they do, right? They're the cops that we call when us cops need help. So it stands to reason that he better be a better shot than me.
But Bob also looks like nothing affects him. He just looks like he's very stoic, right? Like I'm all hyper and I'd be like, you know, I got shaky hands. I'd be hitting the ceiling. But Bob is very cool, calm, and collected, you know?
He's exactly a cool cat.
Yeah, he's exactly who you want, by the way, if you're on a plane and there's a problem. This guy, he's going to be a flight attendant one day. There's only so much you can do there. But anyway. Back to Jeff. Jeff's like, what did I get myself into? But
welcome, Jeff.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast, I guess. Well, don't call it a podcast. Call it a global phenomenon. Now, who's that? That's not Penny.
Guess what, SDS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you, and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of chill out gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD. And when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time gummies that helped knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there are pre-rolls, there are bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
No, this is Dee Dee. This is our other dog, Dee Dee.
Dee Dee and Penn. What? And Dee Dee is a mix?
Yeah, she's like a Chihuahua miniature Italian greyhound type, some exotic weird name, but she's a mutt.
She's got like a very serious stature about her. She holds her neck very high. She's very proud. Jeff, to you, there was a question up there here we go. For Nancy's neighbor right here. Is the neighborhood, well, first of all, what is the mood of the neighborhood right now, today, a month in? I mean, are people just shocked that this hasn't been solved yet? And is there a fear? Is there a fear factor?
You know, this event was shocking. We've lived here 6 years. It's an extremely safe neighborhood. I know there's a lot of discussion that it's very dark and we don't have streetlights. A lot of the houses, most of my neighbors ourselves have landscape lighting. People jog in the summer when it's so darn hot. They'll jog at 11 o'clock at night, walk their dogs. This remains a very safe neighborhood. I think this was an anomaly. This was a bizarre occurrence. So I don't think people are fearful. They're saddened. I mean, this is, as we've touched upon, this is a tragic, horrible event that happened to someone. And it happened in our neighborhood. We all listen to the news events and reports and an understanding that perhaps this person was here earlier. That's disturbing. You know, if they were assessing it, and once again, I'm relying on what I read, you know, in terms of or hear in the media. You know, if that is true, yes, that's disturbing that someone was targeted, that someone was.
Jeff, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're talking about the possibility that the quote unquote Nest cameraman who's seen without a backpack may have been there on another night. That's what you're referring to. Right?
And that's, once again, what I hear in the media and the reports that we all hear, you know, if that is in fact accurate, obviously that's disturbing that someone was fully targeted and the person was present at an earlier time. That being said, you know, we've talked to 3-4 of our neighbors who are all some of them who did know her are saddened for her, saddened for her family. A number of times when we thought there was a breakthrough, there was a sense of it's going to be resolved, there's going to be a conclusion. And as we all know, that did not occur. The other day, we saw the reports about perhaps a vehicle identified. And once again, I don't know if, once again, I'm leaning on the law enforcement folks. I don't know if that's accurate, but it gives us hope that perhaps there is something that could lead to a breakthrough.
Very sad. Sadie Mae was Sandy Baker's pup. I hate to hear that, but gotta enjoy the memories. And then one day you'll have a Fred and Ethel. I never thought I'd have a dog after my Mabel, but I've got Fred and Ethel, man. And Ethel's a boxer and barks like shakes the world, but would literally lick the SWAT commander's face, no matter what kind of weapons that guy was carrying. She'd be licking your face, Bob. There's a super chat up just now, Kirk Dabb. And this has come up a lot. Well, why did Nancy Guthrie take an Uber to Annie's house at night, but then get dropped off? And I think the logical explanation is it was light on the way there, as she could see and get, you know, into the Uber, but maybe needed help coming back. Is that something, Kirk Dabb, that you've thought about from like an investigative standpoint? Like, why Uber one way, drive back? Seems fairly innocuous to me, Kurt. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a question that would be, you know, asked initially during the initial investigation and then any subsequent follow-up interviews. What's curious to me, though, is they still have Annie's car in custody. You know, in homicide cases, we're only going to hang on to evidence that has some evidentiary value. And so it's just curious to me why they still have their vehicle. They released the scene. They released the house. You know, that was the actual crime scene. But yeah.
Yeah. Lieutenant Bob Krieger, to you. So now we're entering month number two. It's literally, I believe, officially day 30. Yep. Yeah, I'm getting the COE is flagging me. By the way, Bob, I think I can share this. He messaged me after the show. He's like, what the hell is a COE? I was racking my brains and then he figured it out. And Jeff, you don't know the COE. It's the chief of everything, a.k.a. my wife, who runs the show and my life. She runs the show and my life.
We all got one.
We all got one. but Bob, now I totally lost. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So. And from an investigative standpoint, it feels very, I don't know, I don't want to say depressing. It feels like the balloon has been deflated. Let's put it that way. But from an investigative standpoint, that's the public perception. What are the actual investigators doing on day 30, let's say?
Really the same thing they've been doing probably since day two or three. They're following up what they have. You know, everyone expects these things to be, you know, wrapped up in a pretty bow within an hour because that's when the credits roll. But that's just not how it is. Sometimes cases take days, weeks, months, years. It's unfortunate. In this case, especially with all the tips that have to be followed up on, that's what they're doing. They're continuing to wait for scientific evidence to come back, whether it be DNA, whether it be fingerprints. They have to do all the matching. There's plenty of work to be done for the investigators, but there's also, you know, now at the end of last week, we had a couple more cars that may or may not be associated. So they're knocking on more doors there. They're hunting the pavement. They're probably doing a little more work because, as we know, some of the FBI folks have left Tucson. And so, you know, it's just that division of labor. So there will be no shortness of work for quite a while, I think, because, again, you're looking at 40,000 tips. That will probably take a year to get through, short of breakthroughs. Wow. You know, people, you're not going through those. Some of those can be done in 5 minutes. Some of those take hours to follow up on because you might have to drive out somewhere. So there's work to go around, and I hate to reiterate this, but there's also all the other crimes that have to be investigated. You know, thankfully, I don't believe there's been a homicide since this happened, and it's the Sheriff's Department homicide units that's investigating this.
There have been two, Kurt,
in the county. So there we go. Those can't be forgotten either. Those have victims just like the family and Nancy. And so the dynamics are exactly the same. So that division of labor has to keep going. And, you know, you just, it's a balancing act.
And one of the really important things that they're doing as well is keeping up to date on their case report. And their notes, which is extremely important to keep somewhat logically and chronologically, you know, ordered through this long entire process. You know, all the investigators that are investigating this case, especially the homicide detectives and the lead detective, they have to do reports, and they aren't, you know, as simple as phoning them in like the regular patrol deputies are going to do. You know, there's a lot of detail that has to go in, and especially for those case detectives, they've really got to keep their reports up to date, because as you can see, we're entering into month two, we're 4 weeks in, and a lot of information that those individuals have to keep documented too.
Yeah, Jeff,
so I'm going to give them a little bit of a break.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Jeff, I'll get back to you in just 1 second, but there's an implication in this super chat, and thank you, Matthew, it's generous, but Strange, and Bob, I'm going to throw this to you. Strange how the person in the doorbell camera has the exact same gap in the legs and walks the same way the brother-in-law does when they went to the house with the daughters. That was, I think, today. Only some people have bowed legs when they walk. If you, I mean, I someone might say I'm bow-legged. I mean, Bob, can you address this? I mean, because I listen, they have been clear. That is the official word. How? I'm not exactly sure, to play the, you know, devil's advocate there, if there is no suspect. But I also don't want to, you know, infer someone's guilt, specifically when law enforcement says that they're not guilty, and there's no reason to believe that they are guilty. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, if 3 months from now there's some arrest made here and there's something that comes up, wouldn't completely surprise me. But Bob, how do you react to this, where people start pointing to people they think might be guilty with no real reasonable knowledge to make that assertion?
It's unfortunate. You know, if someone in the chat saw it, trust me, the investigators have seen it. They've looked at all of these things, and I won't for a second say that, like, the internet sleuths and the folks out there who are putting ideas out there, a lot of them are probably correct, and a lot of them can be very helpful. But I, as confident as I can say this without being absolutely 100%, that's why the sheriff did what he did when he said that the family has been cleared. My opinion, that was an unreasonable and a reckless statement for what you just said, Joel.
Yeah.
We don't have a suspect yet. That being said, he wants to keep that kind of pressure off the family. You know, that's why he did it. It shouldn't have been done, but it was. And I would say, you know, there was a Facebook post relatively early on in this in one of the Tucson groups that I'm a part of. It was comparing the eyes of the person in the Nest video with, you know, the dude that used to play drums or whatever in the band. And those things can be reckless, because you just know how the internet is and how people are today. You know, they grab onto something with very little fact, and then that becomes, this has to be the truth. And then there are people who are staying inside their houses because they were the target of that, and there was no legitimacy behind it. Might he be walk bow-legged? Sure. You said you might. I might. It all depends. Maybe he worked hard on his legs that day. There's a lot of reasons why that. So throwing some of that stuff out there, especially in a big public forum, in my opinion, it can be reckless. But at the same time, like I said, if anyone saw it, the detective saw it, the investigator saw it, and they've looked into it, and they will continue to look into it. All of those things can matter.
Welcome to my life in one comment. Siri, what's the difference between imply and infer? Oh, she's not talking. Imply is to suggest something indirectly, while to infer is to deduce or conclude something from evidence or information. Close enough. Bob, tell people to stop harassing me. This is SWAT commander that I'm now friends with, everybody. So be careful. Imply, infer. You get the idea. You get the. Are you? I don't want to know if you're an English professor or not. Someone here says you have to get rid of Nancy if she recognized you. Kurt Dabb, I'll let you take a stab at that one, and then we'll get back to Jeff on the neighborhood.
Well, I mean, that is a possibility, right? If, you know, it was a burglary gone wrong and she was somehow able to get DNA, let's say she fought back and, you know, there was possible DNA on her from her fingernails, from scratching somebody or something, ripped the mask off. I mean, yeah, it's possible. But again, I'm not thinking that it's a burglary. But it's, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah. All right. So the big news today, obviously, and the news is kind of dwindling. And to that point, Jeff, before I play Savannah going to, you know, put a card down, compare, you know, week two of this to today. What was it like two, 3 weeks ago compared to today outside of your home? Guess what, STS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of Chill Out Gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD, and when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic Gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time Gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there are pre-rolls, there are bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
You know, once again, the volume of podcasters, traditional media, the volume increased. As we speak with folks in a neighborhood, there's a value to exposure. It may trigger a recollection. It may trigger a lead. There's awareness about the larger reward that's available that I understand may have triggered more leads being generated. So we value that. And people recognize that telling the story like we are today adds value. But it also has been, most of all, there was a concern about respect for the family. You know, and because it became at times a little unusual in terms of some of the activity and the volume of activity. So it's that balance where we're recognizing the story is being told, and that may ultimately, it would be wonderful if it adds value. But on the same token, you know, once again, respect for the family, and also, you know, folks live here. You know, this is a neighborhood, you know, and the volume was amazing, where it just stretched to other streets and it started to grow and grow and grow. And at times, you know, become kind of unusual in terms of, you know, the number of drones flying above head. Once again, wow. You got your drone shot of the houses. Okay. I don't know if you need to fly four drones to do that on a daily basis. You know?
But now they've obviously, I mean, everything is sort of closed off.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
There was an immediate, sort of a restriction to a one-way street. And then ultimately, you cannot park a vehicle in the neighborhood, including us who live here. You know, so that was a decision that was made. And obviously, with that change, the volume of folks has... We usually do after dinner, take the dogs on our weekly, nightly trek through the neighborhood. I have not seen it today, but I... My understanding is it's much reduced.
Yeah. Quick question for you from Kelly Wentworth, longtime STSer here. Jeff, do you know if Nancy was able to drive or not at this late stage of her?
You know, at one time, my wife would see her driving in the neighborhood. But as of late, I candidly do not know.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting thing to know, just to know. But today, you had Savannah and Annie and her husband, the brother-in-law, coming to the house. Let's take a look. I don't know if there's audio, but let's watch it one time. And we'll have Jeff walk us through this with us. There is some audio, so there's obviously Tommaso there in the middle, Savannah on the right, Annie to his right.
Oh, So that's the end of it. You can hear, this is Annie, by the way, who's really weeping, from what I understand. And then people commented on this bird. That's unbelievable. Just Mother Nature has a way of understanding things we don't. Jeff, to you, I mean, I don't know, were you home when this was going on? I know you guys are living your lives, but if not, you had a chance. Okay.
I had heard that this had happened. This is my first time seeing it, and it's heart-wrenching. You know, it's we've all had our moments in the neighborhood when you walk by and you see the flowers and you see the event of this moment of recognition or reality that this is just so incredibly tragic. And, you know, this is terrible.
Yeah. You know, I'm seeing some upsetting comments in here. You really have to be careful, and I don't want to get on a soapbox, but before anyone goes and points the finger, just imagine if this is you, and people are pointing the finger at you and you had nothing to do with it. The only saving grace with this video is that it's shot by someone who put their finger in the frame more than I ever would have, but COE would have killed me for this, that finger right there. Kurt, to you, I'm just curious. I mean, you live in the neighborhood yourself. Bob, do you live up in the foothills?
Yeah, I'm about 5 minutes away from Kurt. It takes me about 10 minutes to get to their neighborhood, which I've been to a lot over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. I was one of those folks who were parking, and I was there, though, doing stuff.
Well, in all fairness, so many were respectful. We've obviously, over time, you know, developed almost, you know, conversation and relationships with people. People do understand we have a media. We have a media for a reason. Stories have to be told, and there is a value. And the lion's share of folks were respectful and at moments actually expressing heartbreak about what happened. And like everything else, there are some individuals once again, what I've learned about the pizza delivery to the door or the people stepping onto the property. Or, you know, that's the things that upset people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I took time every time I was out there to talk to somebody in the neighborhood, because it was usually around this time, around 8 Eastern. But I would just ask them, because that's what I did for 30 years at the Sheriff's Department. I love talking to people. And no one gave me the sense that they were turned off by what was going on. For the things that you said, it's gonna keep a light on it. And honestly, and I don't want to say unfortunately, but it's kept a light on it longer than it typically would have had it not had this media presence in the Guthrie family itself. So I was always constantly asking people who were jogging, walking their dogs. I told them who I was, and just, you know, from that aspect, so they were a little more comfortable chatting with me, because I like to know how the neighborhood was feeling.
Yeah, it's just absolutely heart-wrenching. And Brian Anton, if that's you putting your finger in the frame, number one, thank you for getting the video. Number two, apologies. I would have done it much worse. Kurt Dabb, I mean, you live in the neighborhood too. Just want to get your reaction. I mean, it's absolutely devastating, and it's sort of hard to believe, at least publicly, this is the first time they're back there. They've got a security guard. You know, that guy right there is obviously security. They've got Pima County sheriffs. I mean, it's just being played out, like you said earlier, in the most public way possible. And this is their mother that they're grieving for. But when you see this video, what kind of emotion does it stir up?
Yeah, no, it's heartbreaking. Like, you know, everyone's saying, yeah, I have these ancillary things that are going off in my brain, like who's stopping the mail? You know, what are they doing about the food in the fridge and all that stuff? But no, I mean, this is... Yeah, it's horrible, and it's horrible that it's being played out in public, but that's how this case began, and I'm pretty sure that's how this case is, you know, going to end. I thought a few weeks ago that, you know, we were getting a lot closer and closer to coming to, you know, some answers maybe. But, you know, unfortunately it hasn't. So it breaks my heart that, you know, the family's having to go through this.
Yeah. Jeff, to you, thank you for that, Kurt. But this is, so Savannah Guthrie actually posted about this after the fact. These are some of the flowers that have been laid down, and they laid some down. But it says from Savannah Guthrie, for those who are listening on audio, we feel the love and prayers from our neighbors, from the Tucson community, and from around the country. Please don't stop praying and hoping with us. Bring her home. That's the mantra, obviously, now that is developed, which is bring her home. You know, Jeff, just being a neighbor, what would you say to the public regarding this family going through this unbelievable crisis in the public eye with a lot of fingers being pointed at them?
You know, that, and that's where, you know, stepping back and, you know, we don't know. I mean, we're folks who live here. We're all trying to support the investigation. If you drive through the neighborhood, you see the yellow ribbons and the angels and the Palo Verdes in front of people's homes and trying to show support, support for each other. It's actually triggered lots of conversation and reaching out to each other. There are folks who live alone, have lost their spouse or partner in this neighborhood, who are older. And this, you're telling people, I've been part of these conversations, as have others. We're available. If you need something, do not feel you're intruding. Knock on our door. Here's our phone number. And it's, it's a silver lining to a very dark cloud, but it's triggered this awareness. I think, you know, in this day and age, here we are living virtually. We kind of live virtually and in our silos, but it's triggered a lot of connection to people. And it's unfortunately, you know, generated, the genesis was this terrible heartbreak. But people are so concerned for the neighbor, but her family, and you can't watch this video without being moved.
Guess what, STS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of Chill Out Gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD, and when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic Gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time Gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there are pre-rolls, there are bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
Yeah. And to your credit, Jeff, and your neighbors, you don't hear this often, but I've friends in the media, people who are there, and they have talked so highly about the neighbors just being great people, saying what a wonderful, and I know this to be true, what an amazing community Tucson is. And for a million plus people and being massive in scope geographically, it's a very warm, small community. AR Wyoming here. The chat brought this up. Did the neighborhood have any suspicious activity before Nancy was taken? Jeff, that's a you question.
Well, as I've said, we've lived here 6 years, well beyond our time here. Once again, something that happens in many American neighborhoods. Someone had gone through mailboxes and was doing mail theft. You know, so we inherited a locked mailbox, and you'll see a lot of those in the neighborhood. Well, with our law enforcement colleagues here, something that happens so many places, you know, and it's a good practice. Beyond that, and that may have happened a decade ago, really very, very little. I mean, this is beyond safe. I mean, this is a very, once again, we put up the rings. I think it's a good practice. Actually, I had a retired cop who was a handyman install them, and he did an incredibly stellar job of every possible entranceway would be captured on camera. But unfortunately, not our roadway, you know, or not the far reaches of our property. And this is something where I don't really have any. Talking to folks who've lived here two decades, they feel very safe. I mean, the feeling is that this was not something that typical isn't even the word. This is like being struck by lightning. I mean, this is so shocking.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's a very interesting analogy, because I think it is so incredibly rare. Average normal adult here. Thank you. I love living in Tucson, but crime pushed me out of central town, after the center of the town. After 2 years of not feeling safe and getting no help when calling 911, I moved to the edge of town for peace of mind. Kurt Dabb, is there an issue with 911 response times in Tucson?
Within the city limits of Tucson, I would say yes. There's a lot of crime in the city of Tucson, and the Tucson Police Department, the patrol cops, they're just basically going from priority one call to priority one call. And priority one calls are domestic violence situations that are active, burglaries, shootings, stabbings, assaults, those type of things. So unfortunately, you know, with your run of the mill mail thefts, garden hose theft, you know, car break in, there's not going to be, probably there will not be a response. They'll ask you to fill out a form online, and, you know, it's a shame that that's what policing, you know, has come to. And I know Bob can back me up on this. The sheriff's department has always been a proponent of going out and physically making contact with the reportee of a call, no matter what it is. And our response time, I think, is, you know, on par for average. But within the city limits, it's a different story.
Yeah. I mean, Kurt, I know there's different patrols. I mean, I don't know. Are you able to share how the city is sort of broken up? But I was going to ask you, my old neck of the woods was Colbin Sunrise, which is the foothills, which is kind of polar opposite of where the university is. Obviously, it could take 45 minutes maybe to get from Colbin Sunrise down to University of Tucson. But I assume you guys are all sectored off covering different parts of town. Is that right?
Yeah. So the county for the sheriff's department is separated into, I think, five districts now. We have a San Javier district, which covers the south side, and Bob can, you know, correct me on the streets, but I think it's like south of 22nd in some areas. The east side is east of Campbell, all the way to the east, up Mount Lemmon. The west side is going to be west of I-10, all the way out to Aber Valley, Picture Rocks. You've got Green Valley, Aravaca, that is going to be handled by the Green Valley deputies. And then they have a new district in Vail, which is at the fairgrounds. That's where their office is at. And then we have a satellite office up in Catalina. So the county, the sheriff's department, is pretty well spread out. And sometimes these boundaries may shift, you know, a street over or a couple blocks over. But for the most part, they've been pretty much the same. So the area that, you know, Nancy's house is in is, would be considered the foothills district. Beat three is where that beat is. So the foothills district is broken up into four different beats, or it used to be anyways. And the city works kind of in the same way. This, the Tucson Police Department, you know, they have various substations throughout the city that their officers deploy to work crimes within that specific area.
Yeah, it's hard unless you've been to the southwest to explain how vast the land is, getting from point A to point B. But it's nothing like if you're on the East Coast or the Midwest. It is much, much different. For anyone on the panel, Bob, this is a you question, that you are the anyone. What would the reason be? And this has come up many times already, but what would the reason be that they withheld info about how the suspect entered the house and status inside the house from the public? I mean, I assume, Bob, that they want to preserve parts of this investigation that maybe only the perpetrator or perpetrators would know, correct?
Absolutely. And that's the unfortunate side. You know, we as the public, and I'm using we, we have no right to know any information about this case, about any case. I know we think we do, but we truly don't. The stuff that's put out, when it's put out, should be put out for a very specific investigative purpose. Everybody wants to know everything, but that's not transparency. This is what we're doing. The facts of a case, that doesn't need to be transparent. That needs to be held close to the vest until it's time to use it. And that's what it's used for. It's basically ammunition for the investigators. Maybe when they're questioning someone, they try and get them caught up on, hey, you know, why'd you go in the back door, knowing that he went in the front door and, you know, hey, I broke a window. I didn't do this. I did do that. But that's all investigative purposes. The more information you put out there that's very specific about a case, the more information that the bad guy has about what we know, and now I'm using we in the police sense, about what the investigators know, and that can tip their hand a little bit, because they're probably paying as much attention to all of this as anybody else is, because they want to get away with it. They want to try and pull off the caper. So they want to know, you know, get as much information as they can. I saw somewhere in the chat, you know, how does law enforcement not know that the suspect didn't show up at the house? They literally could have been there every day. You know, it's just impossible to know until we know who a suspect is. But trust me on this. People are also watching who's going to that scene. Every good investigator is going to have video and pictures of people who are showing up at scenes over and over and over again, because you want to see faces in the crowd. You want to see things that reappear. That's what an investigation is. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Bob, you're hitting the nail right on the head, because I was going to come to you with this question, and it was another one for the officers, Lieutenant Bob. How do you know if the perp or perps haven't been amongst the looky-loos that have inundated the neighborhood? Even on a day like today, maybe where Savannah is going, that's like the old story, you know, after a homicide, people will go to a funeral to see if someone's acting strange. Mm-hmm. So to that point, are they looking at video of the crowds to see if someone is standing out over a period of time, Bob?
Absolutely. If they're not, they're not doing their job. That's one of those things, you know, it might not be apparent, but, you know, there's plenty of police cars around, plenty of cameras. They should be watching what's going on to this, you know, even 30 days later. If you start seeing, we talked about patterns with the videos of the cars last week. Looking for patterns. Did it happen multiple days in a row? Did it just happen on that one given night? You know, which is going to lend credence to whether it's legitimate, whether it's not. Same thing goes with this. If somebody shows up at the scene every day for 2 weeks, they should know that I was there almost every day for two straight weeks going to basically do interviews with folks. But it should have been noted that, hey, this dude who looks just like me keeps showing up. There better be a reason for that. And if there's not a reason for that, we probably want to talk to a person like that. So, yeah.
There is another comment. This comes up all the time. And so I saw somewhere that it was actually released recently. And Kurt, I don't know if you know, but so the question is, why would law enforcement still be holding on to Annie's car? Sorry if it's been answered, but do you have any knowledge of any of this, Kurt?
Well, it's my understanding that they still do have her car. And again, yeah, I brought that up earlier. It's weird to me because if it doesn't hold any evidentiary value, then, you know, you need to return it. I investigated a homicide suicide up at North restaurant a few years ago. Bob was up there. I think he was the first on scene. And we had that whole restaurant was cleared out and everybody left their purses, their phones, their wallets, their jackets. You know, we had to collect all that stuff, inventory it. And, you know, within a week or so, we had all that stuff back because it didn't hold any evidentiary value. So it is a valid question, and I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah. By the way, the story is bringing in a lot of new people. So if you're not familiar with the show, it is Surviving the Survivor. We do a panel like this Monday through Thursday. We've been, you know, really neck deep in the Nancy Guthrie story. But we do cover other stories. We have a trial going on right now. But every night of the week, Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time is the time. Please like, please subscribe. And then Friday is the reason the show is called Surviving Survivor. My mom of all people is my co-host, 86 years young, the oldest true crime podcaster in America. She's a child Holocaust survivor. She's a licensed therapist, and she's an all-around badass. And that's why the show is called Surviving the Survivor. So I'm on a daily basis trying to survive her many quips directed my way. So there you go. Now, there's a guy named Luke Daly. I'm going to play an interview right now. And this is courtesy of Brianna Whitney. I hope I am not butchering her name. CBS in Phoenix. She got an interview. Luke Daly is the guy who had the Range Rover at Culver's. Both he and his mother were detained. I actually have both interviews, but she got the first interview with him. And I don't know if we'll play the whole thing. Let's feel it out, because Luke's interview is about 10 minutes long. But let me play some of it, and we will get the investigator's take on this.
Guess what, STS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of chill out gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD. And when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is sleepy time gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there's pre-rolls, there's bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
Believe that you are the person on the surveillance video, the abductor, the masked person. Is that you?
It's not me. I don't see the resemblance of it looking like me, but absolutely not. I have nothing to do with this case.
Nothing to do with it. Do you have any idea who is involved in the abduction?
I don't. If I did, I would happily tell FBI, police, anything. I mean, I'd like everyone else just want Nancy to come home and be safe. But that being said, I have nothing to do with this case, and that's it.
Explain to me what happened on the night you were detained, where you were, you're with your car. How did that unfold in your eyes?
So I was driving home. I noticed two sheriff vehicles following me. They pulled me over at the Culver's right there, asked me to get out of the car, didn't tell me what it was about. So they had me cuffed in the back of a cop car, detained. I was asking, like, what am I being detained for? And they wouldn't tell me anything. They just said that the detectives would be there to talk to me. And once I saw, like, FBI and all the other cars start pulling in, I'm like, oh, this is probably about the Guthrie case.
I'm going to just stop it right there. Kurt, we lost Bob at a critical time here because I wanted to get the law enforcement take. But he's obviously incredibly nervous, and he has reason to be nervous because just about the whole world was at one point pointing a finger at him. Sort of, what do you make of this interview up to this point? He sounds uncomfortable, but I have no doubt, at least no reason to not believe him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I would be uncomfortable as well, you know, giving an interview after I was detained by law enforcement, you know, regarding the biggest case in the country at the time. But yeah, it's crazy that, you know, these people are doing interviews. And, you know, like I had mentioned before, law enforcement doesn't just pick a name out of a hat or pick a name out of a phone book. There's a reason that this individual was stopped. They had some type of evidence. My guess off the top of my head, maybe it was from geofencing, right? So they can tell what cell phones or what cellular devices or, you know, some other electronic devices were in that area at the time or time frame that the abduction happened. So that's just my guess on how they got contact with, you know, this individual. But suffice to say, they didn't just pick his name out of a phone book.
Yeah, that is for sure. Kurt, I don't know if you care to share the other part of this story. Do not feel obligated anyway, but that's your call.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was involved in a pursuit with this individual when I was working with the Sheriff's Department. So I was told by a current, you know, worker and former coworker. But again, you know, past criminal history doesn't mean this individual is guilty of this crime. It's just that, you know, he made a bad mistake a few years ago, and let's hope that he, you know, changes tune.
Let's hope in a big way that that is the case. Now, people in the chat, once again, commenting, saying affirmatively one way or the other, whether they think this guy is the guy because of the eyebrows. I think I just have to, again, I'm no person to get on a soapbox, but if police have not handcuffed him and they know a hell of a lot more than us, I think we need to be careful. I'm going to play this out. Luckily, Bob is back. Jeff, not that I don't want your opinion, but this is, you know, we'll go to the law enforcement guys first. I'll get your take Absolutely. As well. But, yeah, here we go.
Like, this should be easy. Like, I have nothing to do with this, so it should be not a big deal to clear my name and move on. But the whole time during the questioning, didn't really seem like more of like a fishing expedition for them to try to get me to say something, because all the dates, I was telling them where I was, things like that. I'm like, all you'd have to do is look at my phone and see my location. It was nowhere near anywhere or have any connection to this. But still, it was tough, like, being there. Like, I mean, I don't trust the FBI to the extent that I'm, like, thinking that there's pressure on this case and they want to find the person. So, like, the whole time while I'm sitting in the back of the cop car, I'm, like, panicking, thinking that I'm going to be framed for this, or they're trying to pin this on me somehow.
I'm going to stop it right there. Lieutenant Bob, just, I'm going to leave it totally open-ended. Your thoughts on this interview? I don't know how much you missed or saw, but.
No, I saw it all and familiar with it. You know, I think like anybody else, he wanted his 5 or 10 minutes, you know, in front of the camera. Partially, you know, you see the chat, hey, this is clearly the guy.
Right.
Calm down. And I agree with you, Joel. The people have to take a step back on that. If this was clearly the guy, he would have been arrested that night. I know a lot about the night in question. SWAT served a warrant. I know why his vehicle was stopped. And, you know, it's all connected. Like Kurt said, this wasn't coincidence. It wasn't random. There was probable cause based on the warrant to detain him. And that's exactly what happened. Like, any of us could have been detained if we were at that house and left it as the SWAT team was going to serve the warrant. It's part of the investigation. The process played out. He was let go that night, like everybody else who was detained. And that's how investigations work. I think we talked last time about why SWAT did what they did and how they do things. And that's just the process because of the threats that are involved in this type of case. It was very professional. I saw, you know, a bunch of still photos after the stop down at Culver's of him, and he was sitting there, he was handcuffed, and all of that was reasonable. And then, like I said, he was interviewed and ultimately let go. So, you know, it's going to happen again. I promise you that. In some form or fashion, more people will be detained, but it's not random. There's reasons that the investigators have to do that, because if they didn't have reasons, they couldn't do it. The Constitution is there for a reason. I know people like to think that, you know, law enforcement just goes out and grabs on anybody they want. And that's just not the case. They're trying to build a solid case to convict anyone who might have did anything to Nancy, from burglary to kidnapping to even worse things. And the second lines are crossed as far as what they can do in detentions and arrests and things like that, that jeopardizes that case. And that's the last thing any of those investigators.
Yeah. And Kurt Dabb, I'll just switch over to you on this, but apparently this warrant has been sealed. In other words, the public has not seen it. The media has not seen it. The media is chomping at the bit to get to it, because sometimes there's other things included. But how long can we expect this to remain sealed, do you think?
Well, it can remain sealed in perpetuity. I hope I said that right.
You did.
All right. But yeah, it was not uncommon for me while investigating a homicide to request a sealed warrant. And it's not just something that the clerk of the court will do. You have to get permission from the judge. You have to convince him or her that the reason you're requesting it are good. You know, a big high profile case like this, there are specific things that are written in affidavits for search warrants. Like for this gentleman here, I can probably guarantee you that there were, it might even have been just a search warrant for physical characteristics such as fingerprints, photograph, the entire individual, and buccal cell swabs where they would take swabs of DNA. That's my thought process on what was going on the evening that this guy was pulled over.
Yeah. By the way, I did reach out to Dr. G just for a quick minute. He did not watch the entire interview. He watched a couple of minutes. He did not see any immediate signs of deception and said he'd go back and take a closer look. But Dr. G is the body language and behavior expert. I'll play this out and we'll get Jeff's take and then maybe just watch a couple minutes of the mother. I find this fascinating. But let's take a look at this and then we'll get the Tucsonan who's not in law enforcement. We'll get his perspective.
Did they tell you what led them to you? I mean, something made them believe they needed to talk to you about it. What was that?
I asked them. They didn't tell me any information about that. And I have thought of any type of reason why they could have come after me. But there's nothing. And I think that's why they didn't tell me.
Were you in the area of the home at the time, like the overnight? Or would it have been something like, we've tracked this person near...
Well, I live near her house, but I mean, I didn't even know that until after the fact. Like, I barely just learned where her actual house was in relation to mine. So I didn't even know.
Had you ever met her?
No.
Did you know who she was?
I knew who she was because my mother was following the case. But in terms of other than that, I would just go off what my mother was telling me.
His mother, I believe, is in her 70s. And that's the interview. I mean, Jeff, do you feel for this guy? Do you feel like he's suspicious? What's your gut tell you watching this?
You know, this is, I always say, defer to the experts, the folks who are trained, who do this for a living, who I cherish your ignorance, you know, and I think just in the conversations I've had with others, you know, in the community about this is, provide information that's requested, be available to law enforcement. And there's been a strong outreach from law enforcement, FBI, Sheriff's Department, et cetera. And lean on the experts, the folks who know what they're doing, you know, and that's sort of the approach I would take in terms of trying to assess someone's behavior or whether or not they should be a suspect.
Yeah. Jeff, what brought you to Tucson? Was it work?
A job. Yeah. Work with foundations and nonprofits and it's a wonderful community. As I noted, this is really just a beautiful landscape, beautiful neighborhood, and you know, close to everything, you know, it's a perfect place.
Yeah. It looks like you're living in a postcard. That's for sure. Lieutenant Bob from Elky Rudell, if I'm reading that correctly. This has been on my mind from day one. Would law enforcement have checked local self-storage facilities? I would think that that's where perps would hide something or someone that they can't bring home. Thank you. You always see the orange public storage. Can you bet the detectives have visited storage facilities in the area?
Possibly. And I say possibly because... there's an expectation of privacy, even at storage facilities. The cops can't just go start cutting locks and going into your storage facility. You have an expectation of privacy. So if they had a reason to go there, which they often do, the answer is yes. It's going to be one of those investigative points. Now they might go, especially I know there's a couple not too far from Nancy's house, just in that general area, because they're everywhere in Tucson now. You know, but you're not just going to randomly go look. Now, you might ask them, just like everybody else, hey, check your video. And if the staff there has, you know, something that looks suspicious around the given day or a day or two after, sure, they're going to go follow up on those things. And that's where they can delve into, hey, who is this person? What is their code to get in? All of those little things that can start tying things together. But randomly just go walk up and down storage units, probably not. Again, that's more of a TV thing, but the bad guys do utilize them sometimes.
Yeah, by the way, the interview again is Brianna Whitney, I believe, and it is CBS in Phoenix. So someone was asking, hey, where can I see the whole thing? I believe this is the entire interview she did. It's about 10, 11 minutes. This is now the mother, this person's mother. And let's just watch Luke Daly's mother. We'll watch just a couple of minutes of this and then a few more things to get to, and we'll get final thoughts.
Luke's had issues, other issues, but this is not the kind of thing that he had a problem with. And he's doing well now. And we're.
She said Luke has had other issues, but not like this. The other issues, she said, were with Kurt Dabb.
We're all kind of in the recovery mode, if you know what I mean, trying to get our lives back and get back to normal again and all that stuff.
For your family, it's been tough. For the Guthrie family, it's been tough. I mean, what is your thought process trying to relate to the Guthries themselves going through this, but in the most awful way, in that they've lost Nancy and there's still no answers?
You know, really, mostly I pray. Yeah.
And they've asked for prayers?
They've asked for prayers, and sometimes I can listen to Savannah's, you know, she comes on and talks often. You guys all know that probably. And I've watched a little bit, but I can't watch too much because it just makes me want to cry. It's just so sad. And the longer it goes on, then the more hope is lost, you know.
For you guys in this neighborhood, you know, this is it's a very tight knit. It's a beautiful neighborhood. It's quiet. It's quaint. To have this kind of onslaught, the media spectacle, and then to become where you are, does that change your perception of how safe home feels?
Well, I feel safe in my home now. I didn't for a while. That's why I went to Phoenix. I have wonderful neighbors that live right next door, and we're in this little cul-de-sac together, and that's where the SWAT team came up the cul-de-sac and stuff. But, I mean, I stayed with them some of the time. A couple nights I stayed over at David and Margaret's house because I was uncomfortable, you know. So, yeah, I just never thought in my life who would imagine something like this? It was so much sadness, and I want to say global, but certainly our whole country, but it goes farther than that, probably.
Oh, really? Nice.
I mean, the way media is today, I mean, I grew up in a different era, as you know. So it's amazing how things spread. So,
what do you want to say to the Guthrie family, especially for you and your son? If there was any possibility they still believed you guys could be involved, what do you want to say to the Guthries?
Savannah, I am just very, very sad and sorry about Nancy. And I pray for you and your family that you heal, that you can go back to your normal place of life and resume and build with your family and your children and your husband. And but I know it's going to be a challenge, but I'm going to keep praying. Mm-hmm.
Guess what, SDS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of chill out gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD, and when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic Gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time Gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there's pre-rolls, there's bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
That was it. Didn't mean to make you think there was more there. That was the very end of that interview. But that she is a great example of just salt of the earth to Sonnens. The only thing I would suggest is you don't always know what your son is up to. I mean, here again, we talked about this already. My mother would defend me to my death, but she might say, I don't really know where that guy was that night. You might want to take a second look at my... You would not do that to me, would you, Carm? I don't know. No. But law enforcement, of course, you know, would never consider a mother's statement to be factually correct about the son. So they would look further into it is all I'm trying to say. But there was something else that came up that I thought was absolutely fascinating. And I did a little bit of legwork. And Kurt, Dad, this is why I called you like a maniac Friday night. And then I was running
around.
And
I'm sorry for the late reply.
no worries. And COE, I don't know. Do we have the actual suspect video? I see stills here, but this is the screenshot. And I'm going to explain why in a moment. But curious, and I really haven't talked to Kurt or Bob about this, I don't think, since this happened. But I got this email, and I get a lot of emails. But this one caught my attention, and it says, in the video of the suspect, I'm hoping the COE can pull this up, but in the video of the suspect and Nancy's front door, immediately after he pulls the grass, he makes a gesture that looks very deliberate to communicate in American Sign Language. He taps the upper left hand with the right hand, then glances toward the driveway. Do you see that? She's asking me. That's a sign in American Sign Language, meaning, hey, pay attention. Typically, you tap a couple times. It could also mean, quote unquote, on, as in the camera is on, because he only taps once. But that is definitely communication. And I said, whoa, that's weird. And so I reached out to people who know American Sign Language or ASL, and they confirmed that they believe that the hand gestures that this person is making were in fact ASL or American Sign Language, which I think is absolutely fascinating. Now, does that mean the person is deaf? Does that mean it's 100% sure that they're doing that? No. But when I ran this by Phil Ramos, who's a detective with Las Vegas Homicide, who's been on the show a gazillion times, he said, you know who else uses sign language? And I said, who? And he goes, law enforcement, particularly SWAT. He said, SWAT does not. They like to use hand gestures because they don't want things going out over the air. I'm not saying that this is anything more than just maybe a potential coincidence, but Lieutenant Bob, just curious. I don't have the video, of course, but we'll try to pull it up. But just curious about this. You know, this just goes to show you, I think, how many different avenues investigations can take and things that you have to look into. But what do you think of this?
Well, I would say a great grab by someone who saw that, not knowing sign language, being able to get something like that, that would definitely narrow the field. Not necessarily, identifying someone who knows it, but, you know, that's a much smaller community, people who know sign language. I actually, at my gym, my former gym, had a guy who was deaf and was learning some things because he would work out with us. And you know, it's not uncommon to communicate like that, especially like we talked about earlier. You want as little attention made to you. So whatever the gestures might be, my opinion is someone else was involved in this, at least one other person at that night. So clearly they're going to communicate. They're not going to yell at each other. So, you know, it might be a hand gesture. It might be this, might be just a simple look. But, you know, if it is truly American Sign Language, then that is a rabbit hole that's worth going down because, you know, it's a small community.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are going to be people out there who are saying maybe it's just coincidence, but I have asked multiple people who know people who know American Sign Language, and a consensus is that this person is using a hand communication when doing this. But I mean, Bob, I'm curious because Phil Ramos, he's like, yeah, SWAT guys know sign. Is that true? Do you guys learn? I mean, you have hand signals, I assume.
Very few. Some teams use them more than others. That's more of a movie thing. quite honestly, because my hands need to be on guns and ready to go, and I need to be looking somewhere. So nonverbal communication does not happen that much. We don't do much stealth movements. Most teams don't. There's too much stuff going on. So there's very little bit, but I do know some teams that are very big on it, but it takes too much time and too much attention. You have to be focused on threats. So not a lot of it, but there are times for it. And like anybody else, you communicate with your dog that way. You communicate with your family that way. It just becomes ingrained when you're with somebody, you know, a simple look, the way you look at your wife or your partner, your significant other, they know exactly what you mean. So I'm certain that if there was someone else there, a look or whatever might have been given to make that communication. Yeah.
I just want to reread this one part of the email. He taps the upper left hand with the right hand and glances toward the driveway. You see that? She says, there's a sign, ASL, meaning, hey, pay attention. She's putting that in quotes. Hey, pay attention. Typically, you tap a couple times. It could also mean on, as in the camera's on, because it only taps once. But that is definitely communication. Mm-hmm. And again, I had that confirmed by multiple people. Now, Jeff, you're my witness here. Am I saying that this person's no sign language? Could it be a coincidence? 1,000%. Is he 100% communicating with someone that we can't see back there? I have no idea. I have no clue. Could it all just be an absolute coincidence? 100%. The reason I'm bringing it up for the 10 millionth time, and I put this out on Twitter and got a lot of people who thought it was fascinating and a ton of people who thought I was a complete moron. So all I'm saying is what I find fascinating about this are all the things, and Kurt Dabb, back me on this if I'm right or wrong, but is this the type of thing, if I actually got through to you Friday night? Oh, the reason, by the way, I reached out to you directly is I didn't want to go through the 1-800 tips, not knowing if they would get to it, which is kind of ironic because we put that number up. But, we just wanted to make sure someone in the Tucson law enforcement community knew about this or knows about this. But Kurt, just speak to the fact that, I mean, when something like this comes in, isn't it true that you have to go down these avenues and at least eliminate them?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the old adages regarding homicides is there's no coincidence. There's no coincidences in homicides. Myself, looking at the video after I got your message, and I would peeped around for a little while and looking at it again. So he picks up, it's coming up here. He picks up that lantana from the ground or whatever that ground stuff is with his left hand. Mm-hmm. Now he picks it up, puts it in his right hand, and he takes it. It looks like he took his hand off and to fold it over, because that's the thing he was going to use to put over. That's what I think that is.
Okay.
Now, do I think that there was more than one individual involved, and was there somebody else out there, either in the front or the back? Yeah, absolutely. Because I've said it all along. You're not going to go in and be able to kill and or, kidnap and carry out, a nearly non-ambulatory 84-year-old woman. We have a lot of people that have to pass a test, to become cops. Everybody does. And one of the things that they have to do is they have to do what's called a body drag, and it's a dummy. And what does it weigh, Bob? 130 pounds or something like that?
165.
So, and that thing is a bear. You just have to pick it up underneath the arms and walk back with it, turn around and walk back. Yeah, I'm not seeing, this guy going in there and doing a fireman's carry and, taking her out the door. So there was obviously more than one individual involved.
Yeah.
But I think that it's great that, people are noticing those things, because yes, those things are important. Look, I had mentioned, on the last podcast, we had a missing woman out in Avra Valley, west of the highway. And I literally watched 24 hours of video, and you can imagine how boring it is sitting there watching surveillance video. So things do get missed. So it's a good pickup, but I don't think it was communication per se.
And I love hearing that, because like I said, I am not married to the concept. I just thought it was a fascinating take on probably a very remote possibility. But Jeff Lemie, I hope I didn't butcher your name, and can't thank you enough for coming on as a guest on Surviving the Survivor. I hope that you will come back as this story continues to unfold. But just curious, again, from a human perspective, How surreal or bizarre has this been to watch literally a global story play out, and the epicenter is three or four homes from where you live?
It truly has been. I mean, we have media from Australia, from Europe. I mean, it's been a really bizarre, unique experience. And we always get back to, I mean, when you played that video earlier of the family coming to the home, always remembering who are the most important people, and obviously our neighbor and her family.
Jeff, don't want to put you on the spot, but we like to plug things on here too. We've got a big audience. You said you work for nonprofits. Is there any way that our audience can help in any way?
No, I appreciate that. No, I work with health systems and universities and, you know, folks doing good, you know, nice. So, and I hope maybe perhaps we did some good today. So,
yeah, I hope so. Well, you coming on was a huge insight into just showing people what a great community Tucson is, what a wholesome community is, and we appreciate your insight. Kurt Dabb, we always appreciate your insight. You just talked about looking at video footage for 24 hours. For those who do not know, Kurt has, whether he likes it or not, become somewhat of a regular guest here. He's a retired Pima County homicide detective. But Kurt, your former colleagues and the FBI have to go through between 5,000 and 10,000 hours of video. How do you do that? How long does that take? How are they doing it?
Well, it takes 5,000 or 10,000 hours to go through 5,000 or 10,000 hours of video.
Yeah.
Quite literally. Yeah. And, you know, like Bob said earlier, there's, you know, some 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 tips that have to be gone through. So and to reiterate what Bob said earlier, you know, you asked Joe, what are the detectives doing now? That's exactly what they're doing. They're watching video, they're going through, they're analyzing things. So the work is not over. The task force, if you will, or the workforce may have dwindled because, like we've said before, you know, we have to get back to other cases, but that's what the detectives are doing now.
And Kurt Dabb, I've got to ask you, first of all, look at this. Kurt is loved. Yes, he is, with the blue heart, back the blue. Kurt, what's your gut telling you? Is this eventually going to be solved? What is your, in your heart of hearts, what do you think?
Well, I absolutely think it's going to be solved. To think that it wouldn't be in today's day and age with all the technology we have, you know, would be foolish. And again, you have to remember, it's probably more than one individual involved. So we're talking a conspiracy here. And there is no honor amongst thieves. We don't catch the smart ones. This one has been a little bit smart so far. It's fooled a lot of people. It's fooled the FBI. But I think it'll come to a solution. But what that time frame looks like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's also been a lot of talk about this, or a lot of talk about things, but a star under his jacket on the left shoulder could be some kind of security badge. We just don't know enough because we can't rip that jacket off to make sure. But Lieutenant Bob Krieger, we do know, is a, as my mother would say, is a gentleman and a scholar and a SWAT commander. Bob Krieger, these are the sick things that I think about, but I'm curious, how fast in your SWAT days would it take you to, I guess you wouldn't take a gun out of a holster. How fast could you take a gun out of a holster and shoot someone, Bob Krieger? I want to know the answer.
Fraction of a second.
Fraction of a second.
Probably from draw to first round, about a second. And then to unload a full magazine, so 17 rounds, probably two more seconds. Hopefully they all hit, though, because that's more important.
Yeah, by the way, not being a very manly man, as you guys could probably tell, I find this very interesting. I live vicariously through these guys. And how accurate can you be from how far away with, like, a handgun?
I would be comfortable 25 to 35 yards with my handgun. Kind of in the SWAT world, if you have to take a shot at 25 yards with your handgun, that's about the time we start transitioning to our long guns for more precision shots. You know, it's obviously easier and more accurate with a rifle. But up to about, you know, Joel, if you're held hostage inside 20 yards, I'm comfortable saving your life with a handgun.
Whoa. That's unbelievable. Kurt, do you feel the same way, or would I be dead?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I'd be able to cover you in 20 yards.
Yeah. So wait, let me understand this, Lieutenant Bob. So on a football field, you're at the goal line. I'm on the 35-yard line. What if I'm running? Can you get me?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What if someone has me held hostage in an arm lock and I'm running? Will you get the hostage taker? Are you confident?
I've seen speed, you know, take out the hostage. As long as I don't kill you, we're good. We've got tactics, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we train for that all the time. All those different scenarios, live fire, you know, and all cops know I'm not going to randomly start throwing rounds down range at that distance if I'm not really sure about it. But we're going to save you. I promise you that. We're going to get to you. We're going to save you.
I love this job because now I have new friends. Lieutenant Bob, I don't know if I told you this, but so we have a friend, Rob DiBico. I think I can say his name. He was a member of the HRT, FBI's HRT. And when the DC sniper thing was happening, he was hanging out of a helicopter trying to sniper the DC sniper. So they were looking for him. Anyway, we went to Mexico City a couple years ago, and he said, make sure your kids have air tags in their shoes because I'll come get them if I need be. But I remember he told me they used to shoot 100,000 rounds of ammo a year. How much ammo is that in a year, Bob?
Oh, it's 100,000 rounds a year. but I've trained with HRT before. I've trained with helicopters before. We got to do some cool stuff. We've had to utilize our tactics. I've been on probably 15 to 20 hostage calls in my career on the team, which is it's a lot. A lot of them were not as significant as others, but some were. And, you know, it's why we do what we do. It's why we train. It's why we shoot 100,000 rounds. So that one round that really matters. Because that's really, everything's a one round qual at that point in those high risk situations.
Yeah. I am into this, by the way. I couldn't fake this. If I was at dinner with Bob, he'd be tortured because I'd be going on for like 5 hours with every possible scenario, which I'll do one day, and he'll be tortured. But
once you guys move back, I love cooking, and so here's your open invite. Now you got a reason to bring it back to Tucson.
Yeah, I'd be like, if I'm on the 35-yard line, my dog runs west, and I go east. Yeah. If you guys can't respect the work that these guys do, I don't know what you can respect, but I have all the respect in the world for these guys who put themselves literally, and especially not to minimize Kurt Dabb in any way, but I mean, Bob's breaking into homes with guys with guns pointed at them. So if you don't have respect for that, I don't know who you would have respect for. But another absolutely amazing panel. Love having these guests on. We will bring them back on. And obviously here, we've got to get Nancy back home, bring her home. Jeff, let me just round it out with you real quick. Do you have hope that this will be solved as a resident of Tucson?
You have to. You know, and I know, as you said, you opened with it's beginning of the second month. But we had some moments where we had great hope and the hopes were dashed. But the next breakthrough might be the breakthrough, and we have to think that way.
I lied. I have one more question. This is a Bob question. Bob, what makes someone like a great shot versus a decent shot? Like what makes someone you versus, I won't even say me. Not to minimize Kurt, but what's the difference between you and just like a homicide detective in Pima County?
The hundreds of thousands of rounds that I shot a year. It's training, but then deeper than that, breath and trigger control are the two things. I was a sniper for 18 years. That was my specialty on the team. And it all comes down to that, being able to control your emotions, to control your heart rate, to control your breath, to know when to pop that round, when to press that trigger, at what point in your breathing. People don't know how you lay your feet on the ground, how you're standing. All of those things matter.
Let's see that dog. How do you learn to control your breath? That's what I want to know. It's a whole other show, by the way. Who's this guy? Who's it? That looks like Mabel Rose almost.
Yeah. So everyone else is introducing their dog, and I had to open the door. So this is Wiggles. she's one of our many rescues, and Kurt's met her, and he knows how neurotic she is, but she's a crazy one, and we wanted to get her some screen time. But
by the way, she's the safest dog in Tucson by far. But yeah, how do you learn to control your breath like that under that?
It's not so much controlling. It's listening to it and knowing when you have that natural respiratory pause. So you breathe, you let it out, and there's a pause before you inhale again. And that's when you're most relaxed. So it's, you don't hold your breath. That's a bad tactic. Then you're all over the place. But it's knowing you're so in touch with your heart rate and your breathing that you know when you have your natural respiratory pause, and that's when the gun is stillest, and all these little things. And that's just, again, through the training that I got, the things that I learned over the years. And it all, no matter what you're shooting, all those little things matter. And that's just, you know, you go from a 3-inch circle to a 1-inch circle to sub minute, you know, and again, a lot of rounds, a lot of training, just like anything else.
Wow. As you guys all know, I could talk about this for another 7 hours. I'll do a show with Bob one day just on this next time we are away. On that note, love you, America. Thank you to Jeff Lemie. Love you, Tucson. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Lieutenant Bob Krieger. Tucson, one of the best places in the world to live. Shout out to Stacy Olson, a friend of mine who may or may not be related to the famous Coach Olson, the University of Arizona. And love everyone in Tucson, and let's bring Nancy home. We'll see you tomorrow. We got the trial 10:30 a.m. and then another show tomorrow night.